Welcome to Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, the RNIB's technology show for blind and partially sighted people. See technology differently.
Oh, hello. Welcome along to another Tech Talk with me, Stephen Scott, and I have Robin Christofferson from AbilityNet back with me here. Hello, Robin.
Really pleased to be back again. Thanks, guys.
And Andy's here as well. Hello.
Hello. Hello, Stephen. Hello, Robin.
Yeah, we're all here. It's excellent. Well, I've got to say, I am particularly bouncy this week because of a new purchase.
Yes. Oh, let me sit down.
Colour me surprised.
Well, this is not going to be a shock to you to know that I bought a new Apple product, right? I mean, this is not a surprise, probably. But I did because Apple announced last week the new AirPod Pros. These are the new version of the AirPods, and these are in-ear earbuds, which have noise cancellation and lots of lovely features. And I went out and got myself a pair. And it's not a shock, I know, but I wanted to talk about it this week. Now, I know, Robin, you had a chance to try these out. And I have the, from my understanding, you snubbed them. You weren't a fan.
No. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily want to spend, well, for me, the issues that you have that these AirPods Pro are addressing, which is namely lots of sweat. Part of my eye condition is that I don't sweat a single drop, so that's not an issue for me.
Hang on. Whoa.
It's true.
Right there.
It's true.
Because of your eye condition, you don't sweat.
Not a single drop.
Can I get that
my
eye condition?
Trainers,
can I swap you?
Are like brand new trainers. Okay, so yeah. It's yeah, breaking news. No sweat on this.
No breaking sweat anyway.
Yeah.
Wow.
So that's not a problem for me because these are much more kind of water. They're not waterproof, but you know, sweat resistant and general grunge resistance, which you might need. I don't know.
We're eating at this moment. Right. Okay.
And the in-ear thing is to help with people who, for whom, you know, they don't fit snugly enough, or they kind of fall out, which for me isn't a problem either. Mm. I know the in-ear bit then gives you fantastic noise cancellation capabilities, doesn't it? Because you've got a better seal there. So
I'll tell you in a minute. I want to know what you think of them.
So they're really weird shaped. The stems are considerably smaller, the pointy down bits, than on AirPods. And the bit that goes in your ear is similar, but then at the last bit, which is kind of furthest most in, if you anyone that knows about ear pods, the bit you stick in your ear, it's got a big hole at the end where some of the sound comes out. That bit, take a sharp right turn into your lug hole, and that's where there is the rubber tip thing. So yeah, it's like an AirPod or an ear pod with a sharp right turn at the end, with a little thing that goes into your ear canal. So it looked really odd, but luckily they have made a really good job of putting it in a almost the same size case. They go in a very different angle now, don't they?
Yeah.
But yeah, it's and they, really and still they don't, very neat.
They don't feel, in some ways it feels like you're putting, say it's the left one, it feels like it's the wrong ear you're putting it into because of the shape of these things. It almost feels like you're putting it in the wrong way. Okay, did you try, I'm assuming you went into a store to try these?
Yeah.
Yeah, because the store lets you try them. Although I did ask the question, do you clean these afterwards or like before, preferably? But they do, yes, they do.
I don't care about that.
You don't care? Oh, what is wrong with you?
People's earwax, absolutely fine. You've got to eat a peck of dirt before you die. Anyway,
come on. I mean, he gives his PIN number to anybody. He's all over taking anyone else's earwax. What kind of man are you? What's going on here? I'm totally
relaxed.
Confused. What is this eye condition you've got that causes you no sweat? I am still intrigued by this.
So actually, it's unique to our family. And we've been, every time we've been to Moorfields for every, you know, once a year for our whole lives, if there were any kind of passing research students or trainee doctors or whatever, they'd bring them in to have a look in our eyes.
Point at you, right.
Yeah, so it's a very, well, I can tell you the actual name of it, which isn't actually a name because it's unique to our family, but it like describes it, which is autosomal dominant neovascular vitreoretinopathy.
All right, I only asked.
Yeah.
Wow, that is.
You wish you hadn't now.
Well, no, I mean, that is incredible. So obviously,
it's just inflammation, basically,
right?
Which turns your lovely responsive retinas into a whole bunch of scar tissue. So, yeah.
Right, okay.
But no sweat.
But no sweat. You'd be great on a cruise around the Caribbean, wouldn't you? I mean, I could last
really,
5 minutes.
I overheat really easily, actually. So, yeah, give me cold rather than heat, I'm afraid.
I mean, if I was in the Caribbean with you, I'd probably drown the ship with sweat, you know, hanging around there for too long, whereas you'd be fine. Anyway, this is not a sweat show. Let's not talk about that. It's not a health program.
Sweat talk.
Sweat talk, yeah. Okay, let's get back to the airport. So, yes, I did buy them, and I did try them as well. So I'd gone into the store, and I'll be honest, I was kind of hoping not to want to buy them because, you know, it's a lot of money. It was £250 to buy.
I think getting within 100 yards of them when you didn't actually want to buy them was your biggest mistake,
yeah. Well, yeah. You know, I called Andy about 5 minutes after I bought them.
You did.
And I said, Andy, I bought AirPods.
Kel surprise.
Yeah. He was not surprised.
They must rub their hands together with glee when they see you walk into the fruit
Except
store.
You might take them back.
Well, the thing is that I go in now and they ask for your email address.
Yeah.
And obviously they can then see the things you've bought in the past. And it's funny, the attitude goes from being like, hi, good day, to, hey, can we get you a cup of tea?
Happy days are here again.
Here he is.
Does it not show all the returns as well, though?
Oh, no. I don't do returns.
Different system.
Here comes Mr. Scott, cha-ching!
I'm not Mr. Return, you know.
It's a holiday in Barbados for us.
Yeah, exactly. I think I'm keeping this company going.
Do they work on commission?
Well, I certainly don't. I wish I did. But yes, so I decided to get them because after trying them, I did ask them to play me country music down the lug holes because I like country music. Mm. So they did, and that was what sold it to me.
All right. Didn't throw you out at that stage.
Yeah, see, that's quite enough of that. But no, I think the sound quality is incredible off of these, and it's interesting because my chosen sort of listening to headset at the minute is a pair of Bose noise cancelling headphones, the QC35s, which are very good, have excellent noise cancellation. Now there's an argument that says Sony have done a much better job at the noise cancellation. I've never tried them, but the over ear headphones, the big headphones, the Bose ones that I've got, those are lovely. Great on flights, very enjoyable because it does cut out all of that horrible plane noise. If you're on a train, cuts out the noise of the train and all of that. You just get the nice sound in your ear of whatever you're listening to, be it a podcast or a radio show or music. I was very sceptical that any ear could do this. I was pleasantly surprised. Then we turned on the noise cancellation, which was good. I wouldn't say it's as good as Bose, if I'm honest. But then I often find with noise cancellation, people maybe get the wrong idea about it. It's not really to cut out chatter. So if you're in an environment where there's a lot of talk, a lot of people talking, like a busy store, for example, I don't think it cuts out as much as people might think it does.
And I think that's on purpose because you can aggressively filter out all the spectrum and then you're completely cut off, and there are safety implications there as well. And I know it's got transparent mode too, hasn't it?
Well, this
where
is
where it lets everything through.
So they turned on transparency mode, and I am blown away because what got me about it, I mean, I've tried a similar thing on the Samsung Galaxy Buds. There's a similar feature there. I can't remember the name of it offhand. I want to say ambient mode, but that's not right. It's a kind of transparency mode where you can hear what's going on around you despite having these earbuds in. And it was okay, but it felt just like someone had turned on a microphone inside a tiny speaker, you know, inside a tiny ear pod. The sound quality wasn't great. It sounded like I was going to get fed back to at any given second, like, you know, there was a microphone too close to a speaker somewhere. And the sound quality wasn't great, whereas with the AirPods, I was able to have a conversation with the person I was talking to and actually hear them better than hearing them without the AirPods on. Now, Andy and I were talking earlier today, and you were saying you're finding as you get older, because you are obviously ancient, same as me, you know, you're getting to that stage where you're struggling to hear in loud environments.
Yeah.
It's difficult to hear other people.
Yeah, not helped by the fact that most of my teenage years were spent going to very loud music gigs.
That's your own fault, isn't it?
Tinnitus, so it is kind of my own fault. But yeah,
I would want to add in here that my wife always says, let me put my glasses on so I can hear you. So maybe your eyesight's going as well, Andy.
Yeah, I have got contact lenses, I think. There's not much of me left that's working properly.
It's all lip reading.
But it is, when you're in a club or you're in a pub which plays music, or you're in a conversation and there's background music, it's difficult to sort of filter out the conversation that you're having with someone who's 3 or 4 feet away from you to what's being played over the loudspeakers. It becomes really difficult to keep a conversation going. Mm. And yeah, something like this would be fantastic. What I want to know is, will this work with something that will benefit you, Stephen, which will be voiceover? So can you have voiceover playing in the background while...
Well, this was my question. So can you just run in either transparency mode or in noise cancellation mode all the time? The answer is yes, you can. You can have it in transparency mode, which means the microphones are open. And I should just say as well, the thing about transparency mode that I really like is it uses the microphones to get the sound. So obviously, if you're looking at someone and they're talking to you, you'll hear them much more clearly. Now, of course, for blind people, we don't tend to, especially completely blind people, you may not always look at the person. I think you do, Robin. I think you've got a bit of an...
You try to
do it. But I think if you had these in and you were... if you were looking at someone or trying to get the source of the sound, you know, you would pick it up. You would know that by the time you turn left, oh, there's the voice, and you would get the sound quality much clearer, which means you're actually looking at the person as well. So socially, that's a good thing. It's a bit of a byproduct of it, but, you know, it is an interesting one for us. But the sound quality was excellent from it. I was really, really impressed. And yes,
a lot more bass.
The music quality was brilliant. I mean, I wouldn't generally use earbuds to listen to music, but no, I, as you know, I love my good audio quality. These were up there with the Bose, absolutely up there with the Bose, with the bass level, with the sound quality. Turning on the noise cancellation does make the difference, and you know, yeah, a really, really nice thing. I also like the fact you can switch it on and off with a little kind of thing. You almost feel like you're pressing on the side. There's these little kind of
flat areas. To finish off the description of how they're different from standard AirPods. If people are thinking about in-ear things, they often have these kind of loops or hooks that go over certain parts of your ear to kind of keep them in. It doesn't have anything like that. It's just like a standard AirPod or EarPod with that kind of right angle bend at the very end, which goes into your ear canal. And the stems, as I mentioned before, being a bit shorter. But yeah, they now have, it's no longer tapping. The controls are very different, aren't
they?
You're pressing the stem and it gives a haptic click, which makes you feel that you're actually clicking something.
That's right, and that is much
is very
better.
Cool.
Because I mean, oftentimes the double tap thing never really worked for me. You had to hit the right bit of the AirPod. Whereas this, it has two buttons or two haptic buttons, one on each, and you can set them for whatever you want. It can be for noise cancellation or it could be for Siri. But then you've also got HEY Siri as well, if you want to use that. I just think it's the design that they probably should have gone for in the first place, but never got there in time.
We should also say that you can, and this is what I heard on another podcast, but correct me if I'm wrong, you can do a single click for play pause, a double click for that you can assign to something, and a triple click that you can assign to something
That's
else.
Right, yeah.
So just like the old remote control on the earpods, so you've actually got a lot more controls.
Actually, do you know something? That's exactly what that little button feels like. Now I think about it, that is exactly how those feel. The positioning on that little button is a bit too close to the ear, the inside of the ear, if you like, by the way you turn it, but it's, you know, you get used to it. And it's quite easy to feel, which is good as well, so you can feel the difference. You don't have to worry about searching for it. And of course, they are much smaller, as you say. The stem is much smaller as well. So no, I am impressed. I think the sound quality is good. And I would urge anyone to try them, but try them first. You know, they might not be for you. And the key thing is to make sure that you can get them to fit. They do come with various ear tips, and there's even a test you can run, which will tell you if the ear is fitting right. Even does a test, and mine was telling me to use a different ear tip on my left ear to my right ear. There you go.
It plays music and sees how much leaks out so that the external microphone can pick it up. And if there's too much, then it's not a snug enough fit. So you're lopsided, but that's fine.
Well, I think we all knew that. But there you go. Anyway, we'll talk more about the AirPods as I play with them and try them out. But I will say so far, very impressed. We're going to talk about Apple TV Plus a bit later as well. It launched. So we are going to talk about some of the shows there and what we've seen so far. I cannot believe it. I'm going to say this, but Robin Christofferson's been watching television programmes. I'm stunned.
One episode.
Yeah, you're one show. one episode of one show, but close enough. But in the meantime, let's talk about Braille, because Braille is a major thing that makes such a difference to blind and partially sighted people, at least it can do if you read Braille. For those who don't, you might wonder what all the fuss is about. Well, Karina Gregory is a long-time contributor and listener to Tech Talk, and she joins us here now to give us her thoughts on Braille and how technology is affecting the world of Braille. Lovely to have you here, Karina.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
It is lovely to have you here. I wanted to get you on the show because I know, first of all, you're a fan of the show, which is wonderful. So thank you for listening in. And I know that you enjoy listening to us, but I thought it'd be nice to hear your views on some things. And in particular this week, I thought I'd like to talk about Braille because
okay.
It's an issue for me.
Right.
Well, it's a big thing for me because ultimately, I believe that Braille is literacy. And I'm not alone in that, obviously. But I think that sometimes or at least most of the time these days when people talk about Braille, they kind of see it as a choice, as something that's, oh yeah, something that you could do and maybe we should do and maybe something we should try. And actually, I don't think enough is being done here, enough is being said about the importance of literacy as blind people. You know, if this was school, and you had a child who was in school and you were sort of deliberating over, you know, whether or not this child should be able to read and write by the time he or she leaves school, It just wouldn't happen, would it?
No.
So this is why I feel it's important to bring up. And we're going to talk about the tech around Braille as well. But just before we do that, let's hear your story, Karina, your journey in Braille. When did you learn?
I learned Braille when I was in nursery.
Oh, wow.
And I'll never forget, it was an afternoon and it was a mainstream nursery and the special needs teacher came and presented me with a Perkins Brailler, which when you're sort of 3 or 4 years old seems absolutely huge.
and he
sat it on the desk in front of me and said, have a play with that. Well, I mean, being 3 or 4, it was a case of intrigue, wasn't it? You know, it was, oh, what does that button do? And what happens if you press this? And ooh.
I'm surprised you could even push down the levers at that age. That's a monster.
Well, I had to put my whole body, weight behind it.
I mean, the thing about a Perkins Brailler is a heavy machine. And, you know, for a kid, to learn how to use that it was certainly a challenge. And that of course, was and still is used as the standard when it comes to learning Braille. I mean, I know, Robin, you learned using the fingerprint course, exactly the same course I'm using. And it's Perkins Braille as we use there. Was it the same with you?
Yeah, it was. I mean, this was back in the early 90s. And I'm going to go and sit on the naughty step for most of this chat because, you know, whilst I still have some Braille, it's incredibly rusty because I have managed pretty well without it, but I totally agree, it strings to your bow. So if you have extra skills, I mean, there are sometimes, not very often, but there are some instances where, you know, if you're doing public speaking, for example, and you want to be able to refer to notes, then speech just doesn't cut it because there's a big pregnant pause in your delivery while you're listening because you can't listen and kind of speak at the same time. So, you know, but that's very niche, really. My mum, and I grew up in a blind family, all of us couldn't see. And, you know, she still uses the Perkins. It's still next to the telephone by the front door. And she takes down notes from, you know, when she's getting, you know, information from the phone or whatever. And she's got a little card index box with all common numbers that she uses. So, you know, whilst you can do stuff with technology and, you know, that's brilliant, it's all about choice. It's incredibly useful and it's a skill that, you know, I'm extremely lacking in over there. You know, it's fallen by the wayside, which is a shame.
Karina, from your perspective, I mean, we hear a lot from people these days, and I mentioned this up top, that, you know, we hear a lot about how technology can almost replace Braille. What do you think about that?
Technology could never replace Braille. For me personally, I use Braille as a form of technology. So say like when I was working and I was going out doing assessments, I would take notes down using a Braille note taker and then upload those onto the computer when I got back to the office. I couldn't see any other way of doing it, really, other than to use Braille. I mean, to use a laptop with jaws on, I would have just found too intrusive, I guess. And equally on the telephone as well, while you're trying to have a conversation with somebody and gather information, it can be really handy just to be able to refer back to either what they've said or what you've said in Braille.
And are you talking about hard copy Braille here? Because
no, electronic Braille.
Right, yeah, because Braille technology is a very powerful thing, isn't it? Because the main, let's face it, the main downsides of Braille are the bulk and the hardware required to create it, you know, a Perkins or a Frame or whatever it might be. But yeah, technology has replaced all of that. So now you've got portable Braille, you've got dynamic, you know, refreshable Braille that's becoming more and more affordable. And so you can have the best of both worlds now. You can have the literacy that Stephen was talking about, where you actually are reading the spellings of words. You're actually reading rather than listening. It's much more active.
And I have to say, right, I mean, I know it sounds crazy because I do all of this with audio as well. So I've got JAWS or on my home computer, which is a Mac. I've got the VoiceOver running. And, you know, I can check spellings of words that way, but there's something, and I don't know what it is. I just cannot. Well, I can put my finger on it because it's Braille. But I can't kind of mentally put my finger, if you like, on why it's different to read words with your fingers and take in that information. Is it a personal thing, Karina? Is it just me on this? Or is it, do you think there is something about the way reading Braille just allows your brain to take it in?
It's possibly the contractions. I don't know if you've got to contracted Braillers yet, but
working through it, yes. Grade two, I'm working through.
I mean, I'll never forget after learning, after being presented with a Perkins Brailler, my parents, who are also visually impaired, they've got a Perkins Brailler at home, and I would sit at the dining room table and ask my mum what letters you have to press to get different words, or what dots you have to press to get different letters. And say for things like where and where, so as in W-H-E-R-E and W-E-A-R, I have to think about them in Braille before I work out how to spell them in print.
Yeah, you think about the word and its spelling when you're typing it, don't you? Whereas it's different with a keyboard because you're just tapping keys. I don't know, the process seems different.
So I think about it in Braille, and then it seems to come to me how to spell it in print. Mm-hmm.
So you're really, your native language is Braille, written language.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. Mm. I mean, there is a lot of mental gymnastics that goes into knowing how to create a word, you know, in how it's spelt, particularly when there are contractions and there are rules about those, where you can't, you know, put a contraction over the syllable boundaries of a word, for example. So you couldn't have an ER contraction in the middle of the word, I don't know, viceroy, say. And there's a lot of mental energy that goes into that that will keep you fresher with your spelling. And I mean, as Stephen was saying, you know, typing, you have to type to get the words down. And maybe particularly if you've got autocorrect, you know, you don't necessarily have to worry about getting some words wrong because they just get mopped up as you go along. But yeah, I think that's really, really useful. And particularly if you're in the mobile space, having Braille input on a smartphone is probably the most efficient way of getting information into a smartphone.
Yes. Yeah.
But let me play devil's advocate for a second here, Karina.
and to you, Robin, as well. You know, let's imagine that we were told tomorrow that Braille, as it is probably going to die. It's going to go away. So what we're left with is technology. And we've got autocorrect, and we've got all of these features that allow us to type more freely and get more right. I mean, I find Siri gets more right than I do. And when I'm typing, I know sometimes, I mean, I type on my little phone keyboard and I can't see the keys. In fact, most often than not, my screen is turned off. And I just batter away on the keys. And it always seems to bring out exactly what I want. It's so clever. So I wonder if that's the case, is it that important? Is it still that important that we have Braille?
As a way of reading, I would say yes. I think that there has been talk over many years about trying to fade Braille out.
I think it's much more viable these days because of technology, as I was mentioning earlier. So I think if anything, we're going to see a resurgence of it if we haven't started to already. But I mean, I do think it's a more interactive process, and I do think it's healthier to read in an interactive way rather than just passively listening to something. There's a phrase which I don't know if you've heard, it's hear and forget, see and remember, do and understand. So you know, if you hear something, you're most likely not going to remember it. You actually have to see it, potentially, you know, in print or via your fingers, for it to sink in, because you're having to be much more actively engaged in the process. And you know, if you're learning, you know, facts for your GCSEs or university or whatever it might be, I do worry that just listening to everything isn't going to be as helpful in the learning process as actually reading it on a refreshable Braille display, for example. And then the do and understand thing is you actually have to put it into practice before you really get it. So because I'm not a Braillist, I always say to people, well, I never get past the hear and forget stage, I'm afraid.
So, I mean, for you, Robin, I mean, is it, I mean, you've obviously coped fine without it. I mean, you're not using it. But do you ever regret the fact that you didn't continue using it? I mean, you probably would pick it back up again tomorrow if you started using it. It's not so much about that, is it? It's more about your choice. You've chosen to go down the route of using technology, using your smartphone, using VoiceOver. Do you feel in any ways sort of bereft of any kind of, you know, that ability to sort of, like you say, you know, instead of, what is it, hear and forget or whatever it was?
Yeah, I don't miss it on a daily or weekly or even monthly basis. Right. It's only in those very specific situations where I think that would be a really useful skill. I would have to have the hardware that went with it as well, though, and it wouldn't get used very often unless I made quite a shift in how I do things. So I don't miss it. Am I embarrassed that it's not a really active part of my skill set? Probably.
Well, you know, I mean, that's the thing, because I've got the white cane, I've got the dark glasses, I've got one ear pod in at all times, so I've got the entire uniform of blindness. So I need a dog and a Braille book under my arm, and I'm pretty much the full stereotype, I think. Karina, you know, let's talk about the technology behind all of this. What are you rocking at the moment? What's your Braille display of choice? What are you using with, and how do you use Braille with all of that?
I would say the best Braille display I have ever had is unfortunately one that isn't made any longer. And it was a Braille note taker by the name of the Vario Ultra. And the quality of Braille was outstanding. It was what I would call lovely, sort of cozy Braille, as in nice to read, and just soft to the touch, but kept you interested, sort of thing. At the moment, I'm using a Mini Seeker Braille display, which I've had for a number of years. It's still in working order. And I use that for attending various meetings, taking notes, and anything of interest, making a quick note of it. There have been a couple of other devices that have been recently brought out onto the market, one being the Braille Orbit, and the other one being the Braille Me. The only thing that I found with those is they do seem really good devices, but they are quite noisy when yes. you move the line along.
Yeah.
So sort of in terms of meetings and things, you know, you couldn't do it discreetly. It would be, it is quite noisy, but I guess that's sort of reflected by the price, really.
The Braille is supposedly better. I'd be interested, as a long-time Braillist yourself, what's your view on the Braille that it outputs? I mean, it's what they call signage Braille, which means it's quite firm. It's quite pointed at you. You know, it's quite clearly there. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Well, my fingers are quite delicate, so I would say for me it's quite a bad thing.
Yeah, I mean, because obviously one of the issues I found with the Orbit Reader, I mean, I agree, I think it's a great machine for the price, and what a fantastic way to get into the world of refreshable Braille. You know, you can get some fantastic grants that go along as well from RNIB, Invicta, for example. If you're up to a certain age, you can get these. You can also get grants through RNIB that will give you access to these devices for free, pretty much, which is incredible. So that's a great way to get hold of this if you can't afford to buy one. But, you know, practically day-to-day usage, they are noisy. I tried bringing them into the studio to use with notes, and I couldn't because it was too obvious on the microphone that it was there. I have found the Braille to be pretty tough on my fingers, whereas I've now got, thanks to Access to Work, I've got a Focus 14 Braille display, and that's much easier. It's got spongy Braille, as I like to call it, because it's kind of just as your finger rolls across it, it kind of dents in, which allows you to read more more regularly. And I think that's the case with some of the more higher-end Braille displays, or more higher-cost Braille displays, Karina.
Yes, definitely. I think part of the problem with Braille technology, particularly Braille note takers, not so much Braille displays, but Braille devices that can do other things other than connect to a computer, is that they've been so far behind mainstream technology. So they've used operating systems that have been quite old compared to what's been about at the time, if you like. And I think that is something that really needs to be addressed, and I think it gradually is being addressed if you're a millionaire.
Yes.
So there are still Braille note takers on the market, you know, they do still come out. So do you think there's a place for them versus a Braille display with a smartphone, for example?
Well, for example, the Humanware one, I can't think of the name of it at the moment, but Humanware have produced one, and it's based on an Android tablet. Mm-hmm.
That's the Braille Note Touch, and the Braille Note Touch Plus, actually. Yeah,
that's the one. Yeah. So, but the last time I saw that, it was quite a large device, and it was quite big, as in portability wise. It did feel quite large, you know, to carry around. And you had the Braille display that fitted over the actual tablet itself.
Yep. So it's a bit of a hybrid.
It is. I think possibly refreshable Braille displays are the answer moving forward, but I still do think that people need a way of doing simpler things as well, like, say, for instance, writing telephone numbers down without necessarily needing to connect a Braille display to a mobile device to do that. So, you know,
so
you
see a future for paper going forward.
I think UEB is gradually diminishing the need for paper going forward, to be honest, because personally,
Braille displays alone are doing that, aren't they? I mean, that's the whole thing, that you don't need to use paper. I mean, don't get me wrong, I have to be honest, I do love paper Braille. It's the only time I'm not a paper person, because of course I don't really need it for anything at all, except for maybe making paper airplanes. I'm not very good at that. So, you know, other than that, it's kind of pointless. Whereas with Braille, I do like paper, because I think when it comes to notes especially, one of the things I love about it is I could sit down, and oftentimes I've actually used my Perkins to just take some notes, take them with me, and then use them, especially in a talk environment or somewhere where you need access to information quickly and you don't want to rely on a battery dying or something going, and then you realize all of a sudden, oh, that's it, I've lost access to all of this. You just want to be able to get access to that information easily. Karina, tell me what you think. If someone's listening right now who's thinking, I'd like to learn Braille, but I'm at an age where I kind of worry that maybe it won't sink in, or, you know, if I was a kid, of course, it'd be a lot easier, but I'm not now. Should people go and try it? Should people try and learn?
Definitely. I would say definitely, yes. Because hopefully more and more mainstream places will be using Braille as well. I mean, you get Braille on medication now as well, as well as your standard bleach. So it is gradually being recognised, I think, more across the mainstream sort of society. So I would say yes, definitely go ahead and learn it. It does take time, but persevere. That's all you can do. And with Braille, there's no right or wrong answer, because you should be able to access things in uncontracted Braille or contracted Braille. So if you're not up to a level of being able to access it in contracted Braille, or not confident to be able to, then ask for things in uncontracted Braille.
Yeah, you've got options with that. And what do you say to people like Robin Christofferson that just don't use the skills they have?
Used to have.
Yeah.
Well, that's his personal choice. But personally, I couldn't have survived without having some form of Braille machine to assist me. I just couldn't have done it, because I just don't pay attention enough to screen readers.
Yeah.
I kind of get bored of listening to them, because it's so one voice and so monotonous. You just think, yeah. And then you realise that you've missed something that you should have taken on board. So, yeah. So, it's personal choice, but personally, I couldn't have done half of the stuff that I have done without Braille.
Karina, it's been really lovely having you on the show. Very interesting to hear your views on Braille, and I'm sure many people will want to chime in with that as well. I think it's time we had this serious conversation about the future of Braille, and I'm glad we've started it here. I think it's got a very bright future. I think it's something that technology can aid rather than replace. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to have some really interesting effects, as you say, with products now with more Braille on them and all of that. I think it's a good time to learn. And, you know, for me, I would say 2 years is probably a reasonable expectation. I know I'm talking here in terms of learning. So 2 years to learn, it sounds like a long time. And most people say a year. I say 2 years because, you know, I've got a full-time job to fit around this as well, right? So, you know, you can't be doing it all the time. But the key thing is to keep on it, keep doing it. And even if you're just practicing every single day, or, you know, 10 minutes a day, just take your time through it. The RNIB fingerprint course is brilliant, and it is well worth going through. You can sometimes get copies from the RNIB store. That's often a bit difficult because the copies run out. But if you know, get ordered, then you know, they'll get the copy in. Karina, thanks so much for coming on. Come on again soon, will you?
I will do, definitely. Definitely. Just say when and I'll be there.
Love it.
Thanks,
Karina.
All right, no problem. Take care.
News from the internet.
Yes, let's get to news from the internet. And of course, Apple TV Plus has launched. And I am shocked to announce that Robin Christopherson has watched an episode of a TV program. Are you all right this week?
One thing I was really impressed about on the TV app on my phone is that if you start watching a video and then you lock the phone, it carries on.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, I love that too, because obviously the pictures are no good for me.
Can't do that with Netflix.
I listened to an episode, yeah.
Yeah, you can't do that with Netflix. That's a real pain. Right. That's one of the things that really annoys me about Netflix. I mean, obviously, it makes sense because it's a visual thing, but it would be nice to have the option, you know, because if you lock your phone, then, you know, you can then continue listening. Okay, so, yeah, you watched an episode of C. What did you think?
Yeah, I thought it was okay. I mean, since we talked last time, more reviews have come out and they haven't all been glowing by any means. Mm. So I thought it was okay. I mean, violent and slightly weird in places, but I knew that already because I'd gone through the scripts.
It's a bit like this show at times. It's a bit like this show at times. So, okay, I watched The Morning Show. I watched episode one. I haven't got much further than that.
That also didn't get very favourable reviews.
No, it didn't, did it?
Yeah.
I thought it was great, actually. I thought it was really good. I think that Jennifer Aniston is brilliant. I thought that Reese Witherspoon was brilliant. I thought that Steve Carell was good. I was expecting more, you know, because I'm so used to him as a comedian, essentially, a comedic actor. But, of course, that's not the role he's playing here. But still, you know, able to make you smile. Maybe not. You're maybe not supposed to laugh. I don't know. But no, it was a really interesting story and one that I think, you know, hooked us in. I think also we've got to, you know, say well done to Apple on the audio description front. Umpteen versions of audio description in different languages, subtitled in different languages. You know, really, really good. And the audio description, brilliant. If you're a fan of Stranger Things on Netflix and you've been watching that, you'll notice the describer is the same. This is something I heard a while back. It's the same company that does Netflix audio description that is doing the Apple AD for Apple TV Plus. It's not Netflix that's doing it. It's the company that make or do the audio description for Netflix. It's the same company that they're employing to do Apple. And I've got to say, I think that is a fantastic thing because Netflix AD is very good. And I don't know what you thought about that, but yeah, I mean, you heard the first episode of C, so you'll have experienced that.
Oh yeah, so Oprah's Book Club, which is another one that launched, doesn't have AD, but that's understandable or, you know, forgivable because it's a chat show. Basically, it's a book club where they talk about books and things.
Yeah.
So there's nothing to describe. So yeah, in case people come back and say, "Well, there's no AD in that one," I think it's all, you know, voice driven.
Hmm. Okay. Well, we shall watch with interest. I'm interested in your thoughts, dear listener, because it might be something you love or hate. I don't know. But you can tell us by emailing us, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Another news story that I want to get to is Google, and they have purchased, they've been out buying as well. They've been doing a Stephen Scott this week, but maybe with a bit more money than I have. They bought Fitbit. That is the, of course, the wearable device that tracks your fitness. And that's really what that device has been. That's what it started out as. And then, of course, became more of an all-round smart watch through the generations. The question is, what is Google going to do with it? You know, and does that mean it's the end of Android Wear, or Wear OS, as it's now called, which is the software platform that a number of smartwatches originally are running on. I think with the exception of Samsung, because they use, is it Tizen they use?
Tizen.
Yep. So, you know, interestingly, though, for both Tizen, which is based on Android, I believe, and Android's Wear OS, they are accessible. They do have speech built in. Now, I've tried a Tizen or a Samsung watch. And what I would say is, compared to an Apple Watch, and I know everyone rolls their eyes when I say this, here we go, but honestly, compared to an Apple Watch, it is a very different experience. I'd say it's a much slower experience. It's not quite as quick and keeping up as much. Third-party apps are a problem as well, I think, on a number of these devices.
And even first-party, when David Woodbridge did a number of demos of his Galaxy Watch, yeah, even first-party, some parts of the operating system weren't speaking properly.
It's not great, is it? So
And I just think that the app ecosystem for Android Wear and now Wear OS just never really blossomed, so they're stepping back from it.
And I'll be honest, Apple Watch is not perfect either. I mean, I get set up with alerts for my watch for Sky News and BBC News and The Telegraph as well. And when The Telegraph sends me a message on the phone or on the Apple Watch, I can't read it. It just will not read it. So, you know, there are lots of things that still aren't accessible on the watch. It's not like the Apple Watch is perfect either. But if you were to compare, you would say that the Apple Watch is far more accessible than the Android Wear. Again, it's a choice. I think as well, because so few blind people are probably going out and buying these devices, with the exception of David Woodbridge, who buys everything in sight. I know that's pot kettle black here. But he will go out and get lots of stuff. And that's great. Maybe with the exception of him, I don't think many people are going out and buying this. So it's hard to know where the development is, how it's developed. You know, it's not like Android phones where we have a bunch of people using them now, people saying, that's it, this is great. We don't have that with these devices because, you know, why are you going to put money on something if you don't know if it's going to be accessible or not? That's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, something like Galaxy Watch might make sense if you're in the Galaxy ecosystem. And funnily enough, you know, we've had a lot of love recently for Specialists, you know, Victor Reader Stream, etc., and a certain amount of Android talk as well, but not many people coming with love for Galaxies or, you know, the whole kind of Samsung ecosystem. So yeah, if you're out there, let us know why that's a really viable option too.
Yeah, I often say that people say, well, you know, you talk about Apple so much on the show. But it's like, well, you know, that's the reality.
Where it is.
Well, it's the reality of it is that more and more blind people. I know, so it's a strange one, right? Because in the world out there, the big world, more people probably buy Android phones than iPhones. I think that's the stats, isn't it? That, you know, more people will buy an Android phone than buy an iPhone.
If you include the developing world and incredibly cheap handsets as well.
Of course, because they, you know, get much better entry point into the world, all that stuff. But for blind people, it's the other way around. These stats are backed up by the WebAIM survey every year that come out, and there's various other examples that have come out over the past few years that say, well, what device do you use? Is it iPhone or is it Android? And they say it's iPhone. So that's why we talk about it. But if you feel differently, then tell us. You know, come on air and argue your point.
And the perennial challenge about Apple devices has been the entry level cost, and that has come down and down and down. So, you know, you can get brilliant phones for sub 500, brand new phones, and refurbished, you know, very recent models as well for much less too. So, yeah, think about it.
But anyway, back to the point, and that is, of course, the news that Google have bought Fitbit. I hope they do something interesting with it, and I certainly hope they develop accessibility in more, so that would be good. Look, time is marching on. I think it's time for the email. We said we were going to start the show with emails. What's going on?
We get email.
Yeah, we get there.
We get your email every day.
Thank you for your emails. We really appreciate
them. Here's your mail today.
So let's get into them then. Andy, what have you got?
This first one is from Richard regarding trying to enter numbers on a phone keypad in time.
Oh, it's a nightmare.
I have had the problem of not being given enough time to do this on automated systems. If you can memorise the number or react fast enough to it being spoken on a voice recorder, sometimes that helps. You can get up a bit of speed, and once you know all the digits, by practicing on a phone keypad when it's not actually live. Of course, there's an alternative available by speaking to a person. It's worth mentioning the problem of inadequate time allowed by the automated system. I hope that helps a little, but I fear that it probably doesn't. It's from Richard Foster, but he also goes on to say, regarding transferring CDs to the Victor Stream, if you don't mind doing it in real time, and you have a hi-fi system and the right lead, this can be done. You connect your stream to a headphones output by a stereo lead with a mini jack at each end and an adapter if your headphones output is a 6.4 jack. If your stream is set to play podcasts, you push the round button in the middle of the top section but release it very quickly. This puts you on notes so that when you push the record button, it will record what the CD is playing. Be very careful, as I found you need very little gain to get the right level. You need headphones attached to the stream to set and monitor the recording, but it is certainly possible. He goes on to say, I'm well used to doing this kind of thing, and I appreciate that it might not be easy for everyone. And after recording, remember to push the round button at the top again to take you out of notes and back into podcasts. I hope that helps. That's from Richard Foster.
It seems like, thank you, Richard, I appreciate that, but I think it seems like a really long way around to do it, and it seems there could be better ways to rip your... I mean, essentially what you want to do is rip your CDs into your computer and then transfer them over. I would say iTunes, but then everyone will shout at me, because I know iTunes, and it's dead in the water anyway, isn't it? I mean, it's finished as far as it goes. There used to be one, there was a couple of them years ago. Windows Media Player was okay, but, yeah... You can tell me your thoughts on that one. Maybe accessible CD rippers. That'd be a good conversation to have. Techtalk@rnib.org.uk is our email address. What else, Andy?
So this next one is from a listener who didn't want to be named.
Okay.
Hi, I am listening to your Tech Talk podcast weekly with great interest and get a lot of good information. You can see why he didn't want to be named now, can you? Recently, you have talked about the book situation for blind people in the UK. In relation to this, you have mentioned Bookshare as a library that you cannot access. I think you should take a look at Bookshare's homepage. Everybody with English as their first language can be a member if they prove that they are print disabled. A membership costs $50 a year. I am blind and I have been a member for many years through the Danish Library for the Blind, etc. I am reading a lot and I don't know how I would have survived without Bookshare. A few months ago, they passed 1 million titles. There are some books which only are available for US citizens, and you cannot order specific books. Take a look and try it. There are audiobooks and ebooks, and you can search and download directly onto your Victor Stream 2. Another book option that I think you should look at is www.mofibo.com. Hope I'm saying that right. That's MOFIBO.com. It is an audio and ebook streaming service. You can read unlimited titles for around about £15 a month. Yeah, they have a lot of new titles, books on top 10 lists. I think it's a great supplement to other options and actually very cheap. And I hope this information is useful and thank you for a great podcast.
Well, you're very welcome. I have
secret
to say,
person.
Secret person, yeah. It should be said that Bookshare is not available in that way in the UK. So that's unfortunate, but that is hoping, well, we're all hoping that will change soon with the new RNIB Reading Services website where you'll get your books from. Bookshare is currently only available to those who are in education. So if you're in it and you need to be registered in education to gain access to the library, it is different country to country. Bookshare is not widely available here yet, but thank you for that nonetheless. What else have we got?
Hi guys, says Nadia. I have a problem I was hoping you could help me with. I've given up using my Amazon Echo to access ebooks and audiobooks, and I'm now using the Kindle for PC app to read ebooks. Jaws seems to work with the app pretty well, but when you open a book, Jaws disappears, and you have to use the text-to-speech with the Kindle app itself to read a book. This is pretty easy to do. A simple shortcut key command toggles it on and off, and it reads continuously like listening to an audiobook. But there are two minor complaints. One is that the reading voice is the same voice for Microsoft Narrator, which is very robotic, and it also seems to read a bit slowly. I was wondering if there's a way to change the voice to a more human-sounding one, and if it was possible to speed it up a little. Now, when I Googled it, it said something about going into system preferences on the computer to do it, but I don't even know how to get there. And since the voice is part of an app and not something I'd use any other time, how could I alter it without altering my Jaws voice as well? Is there a way of doing it within the app so that whatever changes I would make would affect only the text-to-speech voice? I've heard people say that you can use Jaws to read ebooks, but I've never got that to work. It only knocks off when you open the book and then you have to use Kindle text-to-speech. So any help would be appreciated. That's from Nadia.
Well, that sounds to me, Robin, like you would need to go into your system settings under ease of access, go to the narrator settings, choose a voice there that you like, or perhaps under text-to-speech somewhere?
Yeah, well, I'm not 100% sure if the choice for narrator affects the system default speech output voice. So I would do Windows key plus I to go to settings. You land in a search box, type speech,
And then you'll see, I think it's like six options. One of them will be called speech options. If you hit enter on that, then you're in a page of information where, I mean, mine is set to Microsoft Michael at 10%. And I'm pretty sure that's not what Narrator is sounding like. So they seem to be independent. So yeah, just nip in there, change it to the one that sounds the best. There are SAPI 4 and SAPI 5 voices. There may even be other voices if you've installed other software, and change the speech rate as well.
Oh, love having this guy on. He knows things. No, that's good. That's really, because I was thinking about using the Narrator sentence, but you're right, that's not system-wide. So no, that's a good point. Okay, well, I hope that helps, Nadia. Sounds like it might. Okay, what else have you got there?
This one's from Rod. Hi, Stephen. I don't know if it has happened because of iOS 13, but somehow the Skyscanner app has become very accessible. Well, I don't. Even if you don't book through them, this is a very fast way to compare flight prices, or could be hotels as well. He says, please advise your red-breasted Oppo that his dot-to-dot podcast has gone off the wires and is issuing error message. Robin, you've got an update on that, I think.
Yeah, I mean, this, you know, we've been so tardy in getting through these emails, so apologies. About, I don't know, several weeks ago, that error cleared itself up. So I think it was a talking newspaper issue. Yeah. It's a terrible name for a podcast for people to easily ask the A-lady. She ends up asking for Dr. So-and-so podcast or something. So apologies for that. If you're happy to have it in as part of your daily flash briefing, along with your news update and weather and whatever else, particularly now as I'm very astringently leaving it at under 5 minutes, so it's usually around the 3-5 minute mark max, then you might want to add it to your flash briefing. And to do that, just ask the A-lady to enable the daily 5 minute skill demo show, and then she'll add it to your flash briefing.
Nice. Well, thank you for that, Robin. And next week on the show, we are going to be hearing from Andy. Oh, yes, Andy. Trying to take over the show, are you?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, one for all the video game players out there. Oof.
Well, you say video.
Audio video games. Yeah,
audio
special
video
treat.
Games. Yeah. Games that you don't need to have sight to play. You're going to be focusing in on one which is coming out next year. Looking forward to that. And Robin, you got a nice present, I believe.
Yes, I was mugged on my birthday, but in a very nice way. It's a smart coffee mug, guys.
Oh, a smart coffee mug. Right, okay. Well, all that coming up on next week's Tech Talk. Do keep in touch, as always, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. If you've got a question as well, send us a message on Twitter, #AskTechTalk. See you next week.